A little intro. We're going to do a little intro, he says.
I've heard that before. I'm Justin Souther, film critic. The Mountain Express.
Put it on the penultimate, not on the diphthonic. Okay.
And who are you? Who is the strange man sitting next to me?
I've lost brain cells. I'm Ken Hankey, the other film critic for the... Who is that? Okay. The other film critic for the Mountain Express. And yes. And combined, we make elitist bastards.
Only combined. Separate.
We're only an elitist bastard.
Right.
So, you know.
Each.
A piece, you know. It's a little different.
Two.
Yeah, that, a pair.
Yes.
A pair beats a single, they say.
And where are we coming from?
We are coming from the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And?
And
I don't know. What do we usually say after this? Is this where we say we've been to the movies?
You know, well, either that or we tell them where the Carolina is.
On Hendersonville Road.
Yes.
1640 Hendersonville Road.
Which I'm sure clears it up for absolutely the entire known universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they have Google, it does.
Well, that's true. And we have been to the movies.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
What movies have
Quite
you been to?
Quite a few of them, in fact.
Well, which one are we going to start with?
Well, it kind of depends. How fired up about how awful it is are you going to get about Alpha and Omega?
I don't know.
Can you get kind of worked?
Not now. I think when I was writing my review, I was more worked up about how stupid this thing is.
Well, pretend.
The whole thing is cheap and shoddy.
The whole what is? Alpha and Omega?
Yes. If people want... I mean, here's my thing. Kids are dumb. Or at least that's how the thinking is, because they give them the worst movies. But yet, you're supposed to cut these things slack because they're made for kids.
And therefore, they should be dumb.
Yeah. It's like, well, it can be bad because it's for kids.
Is this going to make dumb kids?
Possibly.
Oh, well, you see,
and this is just another... It's just animated wolf movie.
With talking wolves, of course.
Yes. With Justin Long.
And
that's your big name. I mean, and Dennis Hopper. The movie is actually dedicated to him, which is unfortunate. So you have to be
sad,
careful.
Actually,
yeah, you have to be very careful what films you...
Yeah, Raul Julia taught him nothing.
No.
Yeah.
And...
You know, I have it on very high ecclesiastical authority,
mm-hmm,
that if you get to the pearly gates and tell them...
Maybe pearly grates.
The pearly grates, too, yes. If you get to the pearly gates and tell them,
mm-hmm,
that the last movie you were in,
right,
was Street Fighter, you go to hell.
Ask the Pope.
That's right.
If he's decreed it. Nevertheless, it's in 3D. Not very good 3D. I think there's a couple attempts at making stuff like you get spit at one point, but it doesn't really come at you. Like, you can see where what they were thinking with the effect, but it doesn't.
Are you saying it's not as good as the snot cam in Fly Me to the Moon?
No. But what is, honestly?
That is true.
I forgot about that movie. Thanks.
Well, I sat through it with you, so
yes.
This
is just as bad. And I don't know. I wouldn't... there's no one I could recommend this movie to. Unless you hate your kids. So. But you might. I don't know. Do you hate your
kids? My kid's almost 34 years old. It's kind of... we're kind of past the age of dealing
with
that.
Well, then, if you really hated your kid, you'd make her watch it.
Not dumb enough to watch it at the age of 34.
I'm dumb enough at 27.
You got paid.
Yeah.
Small difference.
Okay. Very small.
If I offered her money, she might watch it.
That's true. Should see.
Depending on the amount, of course.
Of course. Anyway.
Yes, anyway, that neatly disposes of Alpha and Omega. In the meantime, whilst you were watching Alpha and Omega,
I was
watching Easy A, I believe.
Yes, that's true.
Which turned out to be one of the brighter surprises of the season, and in fact of the film-going year. It is like a more intellectual Mean Girls, and Emma Stone has just, you know, if she wants it, she can now have the place that Lindsay Lohan had Lindsay Lohan threw it away. Spectacularly, but she threw it away.
Or she can have the place that Lindsay Lohan has now, I guess.
And that's even more easily attained, I think. Yeah. So it's a, you know, but this is, it's funny, it's perceptive. The screenplay assumes you know some things, which is really amazing. And it has a terrific running gag involving Mark Twain and Huckleberry Finn as a literary piece.
Okay. So you're definitely jazzed about this movie.
Yeah. I think it may not only be it's not only easily the funniest teen comedy since Mean Girls, which was like 6 years ago,
right.
But it may be the funniest film this year. It's certainly the funniest film I can think of.
Right.
Not that that's saying a whole lot.
At least
lot,
as like a
because this year has not been sterling.
At least as a pure comedy.
Yes. Yes, a pure comedy.
Right.
With certain serious undertones.
Right. But not, it never gets bogged down.
And I think this is worth noting for future reference. If you cast Cam Gigandet as a moron, he's not nearly as obnoxious.
Well, I mean, he usually casts as moron. I just don't think he realizes it.
Well, yes, but this is card-carrying moron. Okay. This is someone who's supposed to be 22 years old and still in high school.
Okay.
You know, this guy, if he had two brain cells, he would take them out and rub them together and probably enjoy it. And after that, we went to see different movies yet again.
Yes. You went and watched Devil.
And you went to see...
The Town.
The Town. Now, would you care to tell me about The Town?
I guess. If you would like to hear about it.
Well, I certainly... Well, I might not, but they probably would. I gestured towards the microphone.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, okay. Well, we were going to assume that.
Well, The Town is...
The home listening audience could see me gesturing.
Yes, they can imagine it.
Well...
It's very manly.
That doesn't look very manly to me, but okay.
Anyway...
I think you were having fun at my expense.
No, never.
Oh, whatever. All right, go ahead.
The Town.
Yes.
Is the latest Ben Affleck film, his second directorial effort. Gone Baby Gone was his first.
Yes.
It starred his brother Casey. He was nowhere to be found in it. It was a very good movie. I think I would have to watch it to say which one of these two films is better. Right now, I kind of feel... I think the purposes are different. Gone Baby Gone was...
Heavier.
And more... to a certain extent. I think it wanted to leave you... There's some ambiguity in the film. Not so much with the plot, but what the outcome of things were.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think it was... That was more the point. The Town is more of...
Well, it definitely was, I think, more art-housey because... And it certainly performed more like an art-house film.
Right.
You know, it...
And this is... Yeah, this is more
and
of...
This is definitely, you know, amazingly caught the imagination of, you know, the greater part of the movie-going public. But admittedly, at a slack-going... slack movie-going
but
season.
But I think people... It's a crime drama, and it's... People like that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean... There's 10 CSIs on television, so there's definitely an appeal to it.
I don't know. I watched the MythBusters, and it's about it.
But in this case, it's a very it's fast paced. It's very intelligent, and not so much in like it doesn't insult you at any point. And I've never gotten the impression that Ben Affleck is a stupid person. I just think he has made some
really
bad
career choices.
And so he sort of laid low, and now he's making his comeback, and he's doing it in a... He's making his comeback, but in a different fashion than a lot of people. He's sort of dragging himself back into being relevant, I think.
So you...
I think, well, I'm not arguing, I said, if this doesn't save his career, there's no chance of it. Like,
well, it appears like he's got a good shot at it.
Yeah, and he's good in the film. The whole cast is very good. Chris Cooper's in it for a minute. He's as his father. Very good in it. There's one scene where Pete Postlethwaite gets to be really creepy, and he's very good at that. I mean, just naturally, but
yeah, well,
he gets
really, like, it was really hard.
Yeah, but
him.
He gets a good chance to be really creepy.
So, in other words, you recommend this film?
Yes, I liked it a whole lot. And if it's one of those times where I've seen it, and I really want to go see it again. Which doesn't always happen.
No. There are any number of films that I leave and realize I've gotten all the good out of it in one sitting.
And I don't even necessarily getting the good out of it. It was just entertaining enough and well made. And it gets a lot of things right. And not a lot of movies do that.
Speaking of which...
Yes. You watched...
I watched...
Devil.
The not written or directed by M. Night Shyamalan picture, which is, however, produced by him and has a story by him.
Well, I read that I think he's still going to direct, of course, but now he's got his little production company where they're just making movies based on his stories.
Well...
So there's two more of these.
It's a dead giveaway that he is responsible for the story once you realize that what you have here is a 30-minute Twilight Zone episode premise dragged out to 80 minutes.
Right.
And it also has at least two twists.
Okay.
And a good deal of pretty indigestible religiosity. I mean, this has got his name, you know, his fingerprints are all over this thing. I don't care who directed it. So, in essence, you have five people trapped in an elevator, one of whom is the devil. Now, the question is, which one? And that pretty much is the movie.
So the guy with the hooves?
The guy with the who? The guy with the hooves. Oh, yes. The guy with the hooves.
And the pointy tail?
That is the first clue.
It's got a goatee?
Yes, that is the first clue.
Okay.
But things, of course...
Wouldn't that be a better movie if
it
was just this guy and they can't figure it out? Wouldn't that be a much better film?
Yes, I would have enjoyed it a great deal more, especially because this works on the horriest of premises because it has, you know... All right. Who is always the villain? The one person...
I thought you were going to say Nazis.
Well, yeah, Nazis are always good for villains, but, you know...
The
guy in the SS uniform is, generally speaking, not the good guy.
Okay.
Unless it was made in Germany during World War II.
Which this wasn't.
This was not, no. This was made in Philadelphia quite recently, in fact.
Oh, much different.
Much different.
Nazi Germany.
And it's the person you least expect.
Right.
Which I suppose could be viewed as a spoiler, but then again, this movie's kind of spoiled from the onset. The ending is preposterous.
Is it one of these elevators where it still has an attendant?
Oh, wouldn't that be lovely? No. Okay. No, they didn't film it at City Hall. Which is the only place
I know
of that still has an attendant.
An elevator. Can they get out through the? Do they get out through the hole?
No, because you have to understand that Satan is essentially kind of a practical joker, and he's any attempt made to leave the elevator is flummoxed one way or another, and anyone who tries to help them out of the elevator is doomed to a gory PG-13 gory death.
why is he, if he can do these things, why is he going to all this
well,
trouble?
Well, that does seem to be a very good question, doesn't it?
So you don't have an answer?
Of course, no, I don't have an answer. I'm still trying to figure out why and mayhem only occurs when the lights go out. And the first time the lights go out, Satan apparently grabs this woman's ass. I mean, it's sort of really lame devil we have going for us here. Well, but then again, it's sort of a lame movie. However, even though it did not get anywhere near taking the box office, it probably made enough money that it will recoup its $20 million budget by the end of this week, ensuring that we'll have even more of these low wattage.
Yeah, two more of them, at least.
I think I need to lie down. Yeah, I've seen
things. You've seen things.
I've seen things, yes.
Including some movies that are opening.
And some of them were actually movies. And in fact, three of them were actually movies, and they're movies that are opening this Friday. The Fine Arts is getting one of them, which is Todd Solondz's
Life During
Wartime, which is a self-described quasi-sequel to his 1998 film Happiness. And if you like comedy that is so dark you're not sure whether you're supposed to laugh or not, this is your movie. I admired it more than I liked it. It's much more interesting than it appears on the surface if you actually are paying attention to what's going on in it. There are a lot of things that hold it together that are more suggested than shown. And there's a visual patterning. Think tulips and you'll be kind of on your way there. It's a grim story about three sisters who pretty much have miserable lives one way or another. One of them's ex-husband is a pedophile who has just gotten out of prison and feels the need to connect with his now college-age child, his just now 13-year-old child who is rehearsing for a bar mitzvah and bragging about his dead father, has been deliberately misinformed about the status of dad and is not prepared to handle that, and then is deliberately misinformed about what homosexuality is, which sets the stage for what is essentially the tragic ending of at least one aspect of the film. There are so many little tragedies in this film that it's kind of hard to, pinpoint one.
Right.
But oddly enough, there's something strangely uplifting about it, if you can make it all the way to the end. But it's kind of a tough slog because it's really pretty grim stuff. And it's also not going to be to everybody's liking. There are aspects of it that are kind of like a David Lynch picture, and I'm talking modern David Lynch pictures where it doesn't really matter if there's a plot. It couldn't matter less if there was a plot. And it's kind of like Synecdoche, New York, but it's not nearly as good as Synecdoche, New York. But, the last David Lynch picture was not a crowd pleaser, and I wouldn't really say that Synecdoche was either.
I was pleased with it.
I was pleased with it, too. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's going to be.
We can find three. Three's a crowd.
Oh, I can find you a couple other people that like Synecdoche, so we can call that a crowd pleaser then.
Yes. And what else did you watch?
I thought three was a ménage.
In France.
Well, we won't get into my past.
You also.
Brand New Day.
Right. Australian.
An Australian musical. Which I don't exactly know how I feel about this picture. Right at the moment, I'm kind of holding it against it that I have, there's nothing I would rather be than to be an Aborigine and watch you take my precious land away, stuck in my head. Now, mm-hmm. That kind of annoys me.
Well, I heard you compared it to Mamma Mia, which is not...
It's not like Mamma Mia, except that it has something of that same forced...
We're
having fun, and you're going to have fun, too, if we have to kill you to make you have fun attitude about it. But it also has a good sense not to run, you know... The running time is listed on the thing as 81 minutes, but it's actually shy of that because 6 minutes of that are credits.
Okay.
So, you know, it gets it over with. But it's essentially it's essentially a feel-good movie, but it's also it has a theme going on to it about indigenous peoples and their forced Christianization and being dispossessed and having not only their land but also their cultural identity taken away from them, which somehow has been turned into an upbeat musical, which even has Jeffrey Rush kind of sort of singing at one point. Jeffrey Rush, who sports a German accent when he remembers it, as a very unpleasant priest. So, you know, I don't know what to make of the damn thing. It's fascinating in a weird sort of way. The colors are really bright and day glow, pop out at you. I mean, almost hurt your eyes, bright colors, which is not a bad thing necessarily. But I'm not sure at all who this movie was made for.
Although, Australians.
Australians. Well, the show apparently has been touring in Australia for about 20 years. It's based on a play. And I can't quite get away from the feeling that it's kind of an Aussie up with people. And I would not call that a good thing.
Okay.
But this, if you're looking for something different, this is certainly different.
Right.
And it's certainly not depressing. But it's not a great film. Now, we come to what for me was the pièce de résistance.
The Extra Man.
The Extra Man.
Right.
A film by Sherry Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini, who made American Splendor, the film
right.
about Harvey Pekar. And this I absolutely loved, and I can see people absolutely hating it. And I did spend...
So you're going to get letters from Hendersonville?
Oh, I'm going to get letters from Hendersonville. I'm going to get letters from all over the place. You know, okay. I mean, I've already been banned from Hendersonville, so that doesn't matter. But... I spent, in between writing reviews on Sunday, I spent a good deal of time back and forth mm-hmm. with another movie critic who had said the film made her feel like she needed to take a shower, which to me was just like such a grotesque misreading of this movie
right.
that I couldn't leave it alone. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm not sure we're speaking at the moment.
Okay. Who is it?
Which won't last, but that's neither here nor there. It is an odd movie about an aging male escort.
A gigolo, if you will. Is that...
Yes, but no.
Okay.
I mean, sex is not involved. This man is very moral. He's very upright. He's very uptight. And he is, in most matters, as he puts it, to the right of the Pope.
Okay.
But he takes in a young man who has been fired from a prep school in Princeton, which most people assume that means he was fired from Princeton, which is not at all the case, and he's been fired for having been caught cross-dressing.
Right.
And he thinks he wants to be a cross-dresser and a writer. Of all things, his big passion in life is the Nick Carraway character, who is the narrator of The Great Gatsby. A man with no personality of his own, which is perfect for him because he has no personality
right.
of his own. But he's come to New York to try and be a writer, and he ends up rooming with Kevin Kline's extra man,
right.
male escort, whatever you want to call him. And it really is kind of about their relationship. And it's very hard to describe, and it would kind of do a disservice to the film to try and describe what happens because it's watching it unfold. But you have to watch it and read between the lines.
Right.
Because it's not... it really is a story about a friendship. And if you miss, I mean, the Kevin Kline character is opinionated and unbending and generally unpleasant, and he uses people. But if you watch exactly what's going on, he's not the monster he paints himself as, and that this becomes apparent as the film goes on. And ultimately, I found the film quite moving, and even definitely, it offers a real sense of hopefulness at the end of it.
Okay.
And it also has the best use I've encountered this year of a pop song on the soundtrack, which is T-Rex's Dandy in the Underworld on the end credits, which would never have occurred to me and yet is an absolute perfect fit for the film. So if you go see it, which I recommend you do, even if you're going to send me a nasty letter afterwards.
Especially if you are.
Or maybe especially if you are, because we keep asking for mail and nobody sends us any mail. Why is that?
I don't know.
People are lazy, maybe. I don't know. If you are going to go see it, though, definitely hang around for the end credits. And you get, you know, it's 4 minutes of a really good and not generally heard T-Rex song anyway, so it's not like you're going to harm yourself.
So, and this Thursday.
This Thursday?
Yes, Thursday.
What happens on Thursday?
We run horror movies.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
here at the Carolina, in the Cinema Lounge.
Yes, and this week it's Dario Argento's Phenomena, which was released in this country originally as Creepers.
You're not much of a
I'm
Argento
not an art.
Fan.
Well, the funny thing is people think I'm an Argento, or thought for a long time I was an Argento fan.
Because I hate it when that happens.
I know. Well, I used to do the Argento movies as one of the contributing splatterologists for the official splatter film guide. You know, don't laugh. I got $15 off on a movie poster in Hollywood by being a contributing splatterologist. Anyway.
I'm proud of you for that.
You should be.
This is not derision.
One
day I hope to be.
And I always did the Argento films. The thing was that people thought I was an Argento apologist. And what they didn't understand was what I was liking about these films is how incredibly screwed up they were. They made no sense. They aren't completely incoherent. There's nothing to recommend them in any constructive sense.
Right.
You know, and this one is a perfect example. I mean, you know, you've got a heavy metal soundtrack, which appears to be there for no other real reason except that Argento likes heavy metal, some of which he plays on himself. And in this case, I mean, you get the same Iron Maiden song, not once but twice, which may have some vague connection since it appears to be called Flash of the Blade. Not being an Iron Maiden expert myself, I, you know, couldn't tell you if that's classic Iron Maiden or...
I don't think it is.
Oh, okay. Well, in
at
any
least
case,
from my Iron Maiden frame of reference, I don't believe
which
that
I'm sure is greater than mine.
Yes, I'm yes, sure it is, but not as great as some. I know some people.
Can we get an Iron Maiden expert in here?
You know, the Iron Maiden expert I know you don't want here. So,
well, as long as I don't have to like sit next to him, it's
no,
okay.
You might have.
Okay, whatever. In any case, you know, it's ridiculous. It's all about a girl who has a. Well, first of all, there's a...
She can control...
There's a mystery killer running around loose, which we don't get to see until right towards the very end.
Uh-huh.
There's a girl school, which means there's going to be a lot of teenage girls scantily clad wandering around. Argento is really big on scantily clad teenage girls that are generally of an age that doesn't upset people in Europe, but wouldn't play well here.
It's a good thing we're showing it.
Yeah, that's why we're showing it. The plot makes very little sense. Jennifer Connelly, in one of her early roles, if not her earliest, stars as a girl who has a telekinetic bond with insects. In fact, she can pretty much carry those insects. She can make them do what she wants to, and which of course becomes part of the plot. And she's hooks up with Donald Pleasance as a Scots entomologist who knows things about bugs that I can guarantee you are not in any encyclopedia on God's earth. I really do not believe in the sarcophagus fly that feeds only on dead human flesh. But nonetheless, it exists in the context of this movie. I also, and this may have to be somewhat edited out of the version that goes out, I don't know, do not believe in Donald Pleasance as a Scotsman. In my experience, there is no such thing as a Scotsman that doesn't work the word "fook" into every sentence. Almost everything tends to come out as "fookin' I Glasgow fook." So, and at no point does he do this. I believe that the Scots, a true Scot, believes that there is substantial penalty levied for any sentence that does not contain this word. And at no point does Donald Pleasance utter it. So I am perfectly convinced he's bogus. Nonetheless, it has something that warms my cockles.
Okay.
Simeon ex machina.
We're going to leave it at that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. It's a chimpanzee, but it still has simian value like you ain't never seen.
Okay. And Tuesday,
the Film Society is Ruben Mamoulian's "Love Me Tonight" with Marie Chevalier.
Yes.
And Jeanette MacDonald and Myrna Loy and Charlie Ruggles and Charles Butterworth and C. Aubrey Smith.
And this ranks very high in your favorite film.
Yes, this is for a long time this was my favorite film. This was my favorite film from 1971 through 1974 probably. And it's still in the top three. And it's as close as I can come in my mind really to what I might call a perfect film. And as a teaching instrument, I have never understood why this isn't used occasionally to give people a break from Citizen Kane, because there's nothing Citizen Kane does that this movie doesn't do, and it probably does more. I'm saying Love Me Tonight is truly awesome, and it's a film everybody should see at least once. It is awesome is a good word for it. It's incredibly funny. It's incredibly inventive. It's full of Rodgers and Hart songs, some of which I can guarantee you've heard before if you don't know it. And no two musical numbers are handled in the same way. So, come see it. What else this weekend? Well, of course,
there's the Owl movie.
Well, let's back up here and note that The Extra Man and Brand New Day
opened at the Carolina.
At the Carolina exclusively, and Life During Wartime opens exclusively at the Fine Arts.
Right.
So those are your Fine Arts movies, or your art film selections. Mm-hmm. And then we have the Owl movie.
Right.
Which I believe is Legend of the Guardian, maybe it's Guardians, The Owls of Gahool, which is Warner Brothers' latest attempt to find a franchise to replace Harry Potter. This, however, is animated owls in 3D from Zack Snyder.
I didn't realize until today that it was Zack Snyder.
Well, there you go.
Directed, which I find surprising that they haven't. Did Watchmen do that poorly?
Yes, Watchmen did that poorly. Okay. So you know, this is Zack Snyder doing penance for Watchmen, I guess. I personally don't know. I mean, it may be that this is a very popular children's book or series of children's books. I don't know. I don't read children's books. That's by choice.
You read Nancy Drew. Is that not? That's teen fiction.
That's teen fiction from the 1930s, for Christ's sakes.
That's where you draw the line.
I draw the line, okay. Yeah. I don't read the Hardy Boys. So, okay. Make of that what you will or won't. But I think the problem that I see with this, other than talking owls, I think is going to get old real fast.
And probably a lot of them in slow motion.
Probably. But the thing that I see is that there's a difference. Harry Potter is young adult fiction that caught on with adults. These are children's books.
Right.
I don't think adults are reading them and waiting for the next one to come out. Aside from which, the Rose Garden is littered with the corpses of the next Harry Potter franchise movie, none of which have taken, unless you consider the Twinklight films to be. It's more like moronic adult fiction, though, so it's not young adult fiction.
Housewives.
Yes, well, that's another story altogether. But anyway, this is their attempt, and as I said in the weekly reeler today, if this one fails, perhaps next they will have Rob Zombie reboot the Harry Potter franchise. I'd pay money to see that.
But no one else would.
Well, that may be, but... And what else is happening?
The Virgin hit.
The Virgin
hit,
we've been hearing about. And it's finally coming to a theater in town, and which Justin has being the manly little fellow that he is, has
He'll
go watch the damn thing.
What is this movie?
I don't remember. It has to do with
YouTube videos or something?
Yes, something like that. It's a sex comedy for the YouTube generation. Oh, my God. Okay. Now.
That's what pornography is, isn't it? That's what it's for.
I don't know. Maybe.
I would think.
Yeah, well, that may be. And then we also have Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Right.
The long-awaited sequel, like 23 years awaited, to... Wall Street. And it appears to be Oliver Stone trying to make up for having inadvertently made a character model out of Gordon Gekko for a generation, which he's felt bad about ever since. And obviously
he's lost all kinds of sleep.
Well, he probably has, actually. I mean, as you know, Norman Lear and Archie Bunker taught him nothing. You know, you make these characters and you're supposed to hate them, and then the audience turns out to think they're the hero. So, you know, you can't win.
Well.
But then again, he's really hobbled himself here by bringing Shia LaBeouf in to the picture, which, I mean, he can drag down just about anything. I mean, he exists solely to give Hayden Christensen hope.
Well, maybe he's... Maybe
he'll actually have some kind of
acting
career.
He's hedging his bets.
Well, maybe,
you don't want this... him. Maybe the point is you don't like Shia LaBeouf's character.
Well, I don't. And so,
well, I'm just saying... He's making sure that nobody
does.
Oh,
well, that may be. I don't know. You know, I mean, any good points he gets for casting Carey Mulligan in it, he's lost by having Shia LaBeouf come in.
Right.
So, you know, that's, you know, what can I say? And then we have you again.
Uh-huh.
A fascinating looking PG-rated comedy starring a bunch of young women I scarcely know, and Sigourney Weaver and Jamie Lee Curtis and Betty White, who I'm sure is there for box office insurance, since this 80-odd-year-old woman seems to be able to ensure that people will come look at things that she's in, regardless of how lame they might otherwise be. The things that they run in the what they call the pre-show entertainment before movies have a lot of people sitting around talking about the trouble they went to put together this amazing cast, and I'm like, excuse me, how hard was it to convince Jamie Lee Curtis to do something other than a yogurt commercial? So
she loves her yogurt.
Well, yes, and she loves to talk about colonic health, too, so, you know, but, I mean...
Well, when you get a passion...
I suppose that's true. I mean, I don't want to know about Jamie Lee Curtis's colon, but that's just me. So those are, you know, our options for this weekend. And we haven't decided who's having to sit through the damned owl movie yet.
We'll figure it out. Do you not want to watch the owl movie?
Not particularly. No. I don't particularly want to watch you again either.
Well, sort of my conundrum as well.
Yeah, well, I understand. So we'll conundrum this out in between ourselves at some point. And in the meantime, I think that pretty much does us.
Yeah.
So... That leaves us to point out that
I'm Justin.
That you're Justin Souther, and I'm Ken Hanke, and we are Elitist Bastards, and we are brought to you, mind, through the courtesy of the Mountain Express, who sends are illuminated, fantasticated, wonderful, almost human producer, Steve Schoenfeld, out once a week to do this before going home, drinking himself into a state of stupefaction, and trying to edit this into something that vaguely verges on the coherent.